Hey, Prime members, you can listen to Generation Y ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the app today. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible, starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia of being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. How you doing tonight, Aaron?
Doing great, man.
Awesome. Do we have any announcements tonight?
Yeah, we have some announcements. Just a reminder, we get lots of emails, lots of messages. If I don't get back to you, trust me, I do read everything that gets sent in, but I don't always respond. But there just isn't enough time in the day. So if you send something in, I will see it. And I love all the suggestions. In fact, there have been about two suggestions now that have been sent in just the past week that we're going to fit into our schedule because they're that interesting.
Nice.
Now, the other announcement we have to make is thank you for everyone who's been visiting or purchasing from our Gen Y shop. The exciting announcement on this, though, is that we've had a lot of requests for hoodies. We worked with one of our listeners who's very talented, and we've come up with a really cool design for our hoodie. So it's not just a hoodie with the Generation Y podcast on it. So
it's a whole new thing.
Yeah, it should be quite different, but we think you'll love it. And we'll be getting those in a week or two from now. So keep checking. We'll post updates and we'll talk about it when they come in for sure.
And just to remind everybody again about our meetup on November 7th. At the Belvoir Winery, close to Liberty, Missouri. It's kind of in between Kansas City and Liberty. I don't really know if it's
in Liberty.
Okay.
But cool. Liberty and Kansas City, but right up against each other.
Okay, cool. If you want to meet us in person, there's that. It's just a reminder, it's getting to be fall and the leaves are falling from the trees. What are we going to talk about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight is a case that was first suggested to us, and maybe only suggested to us, by Kristen, one of our listeners. Mm-hmm. I pulled up her email again today and reread it. This is a case that sticks with you. All you have to do is read a summary of it.
It's creepy.
Yeah, the summary is a 29-year-old ex-tree surgeon, I say ex because he was not employed at the time, entered a home, which they had left their garage door up slightly.
On November 10th, 2010, in Howard, Ohio.
Right. And he stayed in there. And he was just handling stuff in the house. The mother, who lived at the house with her kids, she had two kids, an 11-year-old boy and a 13-year-old daughter. She was divorced. She came home and found a man with a knife. And he also had a blackjack. And she gets struck, pushed down on her bed, and her friend and neighbor comes in, and she's attacked as well. Then later, the kids come home, and he attacks the boy, but he saves the girl, and he takes everyone with him in a vehicle, and he drives them over to his place. To finish that up, it would be some time, about 4 days, before he was discovered as the person responsible for these people going missing. And it would be an even shorter time after that when he would make a full confession and let them know where these people, as well as their dog, had gone to. No one would have ever found them if he hadn't made a confession. It's the case of Matthew Hoffman.
So what do we know about Matthew?
We know that he was considered weird for as far back as anyone can remember. The story kind of picks up his parents divorce. I think it's about 97, and he moves with his mother. Mm-hmm. And then after he graduates high school, he moves to Colorado. In this entire time, he's known as someone who's sort of short on common sense, and he's very risky. He loves to take risks. He'll jump off a house onto a trampoline without a thought. He'll string something between two trees and tightrope walk it. He'll climb trees. He'll climb up buildings. He'll take all kinds of risks that just most people wouldn't take.
Yeah, I remember when I was a kid, I liked to climb trees, build tree houses, jump into piles of leaves. But that's what kids do. But it seems he took it and stayed with it. His, obsession with trees kept going on to later ages.
Right. He was 6'1" and about 185 pounds. So,
and he's actually not a bad looking guy.
If you just look at him and you don't know anything about him, your first thought probably isn't he's a killer.
No, he's an average looking. Even my wife said he's actually pretty good looking. I mean, he's not your stereotypical, you know, lumberjack guy up in a tree that looks creepy. He's a normal looking person, and that kind of makes it even worse. But he had a little bit of a criminal past, correct? He broke into a house and stole a bunch of stuff, assaulted somebody, took the car, and burned the house down. And that was in 2000?
Well, it was a condominium complex. Mm-hmm. There were other people living there. Mm-hmm. In fact, there were 16 people there when he sets it on fire. Luckily, they get out. But it just goes to show that he has no problem risking other people's lives. And if you're wondering why he set it ablaze, he said he was worried about his fingerprints.
So he was kind of trying to cover up his crime, his break-in, and he's caught.
Right. Yeah, he used 10 gallons of gasoline to set the place on fire. So overkill, maybe.
Yeah.
I guess you could say the police were onto him pretty quickly in that case. He didn't seem to give them any trouble. So he goes back with the police. They charge him with arson and burglary. Mm-hmm.
And he serves time in the Colorado prison. And then he
gets 8 years, but he only serves 6. Mm-hmm. Which seems kind of light for a guy who set a building on fire with people in it.
Yeah.
That critique on the prison system is probably another episode.
Yeah. And I can bring up another case where a guy goes to jail for arson and his whole family gets killed in that. But we'll leave that one for another episode. But he's paroled and he goes to Ohio, where he is tree surgeon, I say tree trimmer, but you know, it's semantics there. The neighborhood he lives in, people say that he strings up hammocks in trees and hangs out. Now, at first glance, I think, well, that's kind of cool. I would like to lay in a hammock in a tree, but the neighbors and people in the neighborhood say that he actually hangs out in the tree and watches you. Just that's his way of keeping an eye on everybody. And he won't just stay in trees around his house. He will go to trees all around the neighborhood and climb up in them. And you won't see him until, you know, you're right underneath him.
Yeah, he even had tree climbing gear and would go out into the woods and climb trees out there. But people reported that he would watch people, he would watch and stare at them from the trees. So that's, you can see why people thought he was a weirdo.
You know, the whole aftermath interviews of, oh, he was a quiet guy, blah, blah, blah. No, his neighbors all were like, no, this guy was creepy and he hung out in trees.
Well, 2 years after he goes back to Knox County in Ohio, he, by that time, he'd saved up enough money to get a, he got a loan and he purchased a, at that time, it was a 109-year-old house. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't sound like it was in great shape, but it was his place. At some point, he had a girlfriend and her kid move in with him. But, and this takes us up near the time of our conversation tonight, which is on October 24th of 2010, he chokes her. And that, of course, freaks her out and she moves out. So from October 24th to November 10th, that's where things are escalating, it seems.
And he's actually seen across the street from the victim's home?
Right. When we talk about this family, and let's go through them, it's Tina Herman. She's early 30s. She has the daughter, Sarah, who's 13, and she has a son named Cody, who's about 11. And then they have a friend.
A neighbor friend.
Right. And her name is Stephanie Sprang. She kind of factors in because, as Sarah says it, her mom worked a lot of hours. And she didn't get to see her very often. So because she was gone all the time supporting the family, Stephanie was someone she trusted implicitly, and she would watch the kids. So she was around a lot more than Tina was. So yeah, there were reports that there was someone across the street watching the house. Later, even Sarah would say that she felt she was being watched.
And they actually think that he spent the night in a sleeping bag the night before of the actual attack.
Right. And others have reported seeing a man across the street watching from the trees, even up to a month before.
Right, so, about the time of the breakup.
As we go through what occurred, it's later explained by Matthew that this was a burglary gone wrong. So you could say that fits because he's casing the place. But you would think if he's watching people, he's not really casing the place, he's casing the people.
You don't watch a house for a month before you break into it. That just seems overkill. But it's the house is, they say, within walking distance of his house.
Of his mother's house.
Yeah, of his mother's house.
Right. So he would have a reason to be over in that direction.
So he breaks in.
Well, what happens is they have a garage door, mm-hmm. and they don't close it all the way a lot of times.
To let the dog out or something.
And he's able to get in there. He probably gets down on the ground and just rolls in or something, yeah. or squeezes in and gets in there. Now, once he's in there, from what they can tell and from what he says, he walked around and just handled everything in the house. He just started looking through everything.
And he was there almost an hour?
He was there about, for quite some time before Tina shows up. She surprises him. Mm-hmm. And he is armed with a knife. It's known as like a jungle knife. Mm-hmm. So it's a nasty looking knife. And he had ordered that online. He also had, and I can't remember if it was an improvised, it might have been improvised, but a blackjack, which is sort of an improvised club. Sort of like a sack with something heavy in it.
Yeah.
So you can swing it around and hit somebody with it. Mm-hmm. And according to him, he hits Tina twice in the head and it's not knocking her out. It's just hurting her really bad. And so she's making lots of noise. There's a dog there that's making lots of noise. And of course, then Stephanie shows up.
The neighbor friend.
Because they were hanging out together, as far as I know. So she comes over. Or she may have just heard, I'm sure she heard some noise. Mm-hmm. So she comes in and the way he says it is he sort of makes a quick decision that he has to silence them or whatever. So he attacks them and he attacks Tina on the bed first with a couple of stabs. And then he chases Stephanie. Stephanie gets to another room, but she's not able to get away. And he kills her. And then he doesn't leave. again, if this is a burglary gone wrong, at that point, he already knows what's in the house. He knows what's valuable. He's had an hour to scour the house or so, and he chooses to remain in the house.
After he's been in there an hour, the homeowner shows up. He kills the homeowner and the neighbor, and he still remains in the house.
And he kills the dog, because the dog won't quit barking.
Yeah. He's brought with him tools. He's brought with him some purchases he's made at Walmart, some tarps and other items, and they're in a Walmart bag that he's brought to the house. And now he's murdered these two people, these two women. The son and the daughter come home.
Yeah, unfortunately, he attacks the son as well.
How old is the son?
He's 11. We can tell just by the way things go down that there's something else at work here, because he's killed everybody at this point except for Sarah. Now, according to his confession, because later he does make a full confession, he says that Sarah runs to, I think, her bedroom. Mm-hmm. And his first worry is that she's going to be on the phone, so that a 911 call is placed. That's not good for him. That ruins it for him, because he needs time. And when he gets to the room, she's not doing anything.
She's hysterical, but she's not on
the
phone.
She's freaked out, I think. And she just, given what she says later, I would imagine that it's a survival thing. That maybe she thinks if she's complying and not freaking out, that everything will be okay somehow.
And all she knows at this point is that there's a strange man in the house that has attacked her brother. She doesn't know anything about her mother or the neighbor.
I don't even know that she knows he attacked her brother.
She just knows something's happened.
Let's put it this way. When they both come in and he's there, she takes off. Mm-hmm. She doesn't know what's going on. After he comes in, she asks him if he had killed her mother and brother. Mm-hmm. Because the guy is armed with a knife.
Yeah.
What is he doing there? So he says, don't worry about it. Now, later she's going to say that she knew right then and there that he had killed them. But this is something that's come up because a lot of people were like, oh, well, she didn't witness it, so she didn't know. This is an instinctual, like a gut thing. Like, she knew just probably by looking at this guy, he's armed. He doesn't look like good news.
He's probably got blood on him at this point because he's stabbed multiple people and the dog.
She has to know. And I have to give this girl credit. We have to believe her story because these other people weren't there. And she was. And what she says makes sense. So he ends up binding her and taking her and putting her in the vehicle, as well as the other people and the dog. But she's not near them in the vehicle. So she doesn't know, she doesn't know anything. Mm-hmm. And he takes him back to his place. And unfortunately, this is where he most likely has dismembered and placed into bags the other people and the dog.
Yeah.
And he has a plan. This, a hollowed out tree that was about 60 feet tall, and he had used a pulley system to lower them in through the top of this hollow tree into the tree.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Field of Greens. I like eating healthy, and I've tried a lot of different supplements. I've tried juicing, and I've spent a lot of money and wasted a lot of time. And let me tell you, honestly, none of those things ever made me feel better. With Field of Greens, it's a superfood that gives you nutrition the way nature intended. It's packed full of organic fruits and vegetables, not extracts. And when you're getting those nutrients, you can sleep better, notice things like your hair and your nails, feel stronger, helps with digestion. You just feel better overall. My favorite flavor is the strawberry lemonade. I have a feeling you're going to love this product the way I do. But if for some reason you don't like it, they give you a 100% money-back guarantee. Plus, you can get 15% off your first order and free rush shipping. Visit fieldofgreens.com and use the promo code GenY. Promo code GenY at fieldofgreens.com. Fieldofgreens.com. Go check it out.
Whatever you say about this guy, people have said that he has sort of a strategic mind. So even though he's kind of reckless in some ways, he is capable of planning things out. And which we can tell because this tree, like I said, is that he ends up placing these bags in is over 60 feet tall. It might be 65 feet tall. It's a big tree. And
so he, just to recap real quick, as he leaves the house with the bodies and the girl, he takes the vehicles and the girl back to the house. He dismembers the family and the dog, bags them up, and then lowers them in into a huge hollowed out tree.
Right. I think the thinking was, is he didn't want vehicles present at the house. That's my thinking, because he, you know, if anybody came by, they'd be suspicious that people are there, but not there.
Yeah,
I'm not sure, but he moved the vehicles. And then the other thing that came up was I had read one article where someone was, they were thinking that maybe he had hollowed that tree out. Now, let me tell you something. If you're going to hollow a tree out, I don't think you pick a 65-foot tree.
No.
Right? So I had to look this up because I am no tree expert. But apparently, trees do hollow out on their own naturally.
Oh, yeah. They absolutely do.
They can rot out from the inside. Now, it is possible for people to hollow a tree, but it can take a lot of work. So this would have been a naturally hollow tree. And because he spent so much time out there, he probably knew of its location because he found it interesting.
Mm-hmm.
And so he made use of it.
The girl that he has captive, he has her down in his basement, which is an unfinished concrete basement. And it appears that there's about 2 feet of leaves all over the basement. So when you're walking down there, there's 2 feet of leaves all over the house, really. In the living room, there's leaves, deep leaves. And then in the basement, there's leaves. But he puts down a blanket or something or some sleeping bags on top of the leaves to give her a bed to lay on. He also, I think he made her wear like an adult diaper and like a bag over that.
Yeah, he kind of improvised. He had like a diaper on her of a sort, and then he cut holes in a plastic bag and then pulled it up over that because he wouldn't let her go to the bathroom. He would not let her leave and do anything.
Because she could have escaped and whatever.
Yeah, and he bound duct tape around her hands. She had literally flippers for hands.
Mm-hmm.
There was no way for her to claw to do anything with her hands.
I'm sure this isn't the reason he allowed her to go to the bathroom, but in the bathroom, there were bags of leaves neatly stacked from floor to ceiling on all four walls, meticulously.
Yeah, they even covered the mirror, and yeah, they're all over the place.
So not only does he have just leaves in the house just laying around, but he has bagged the leaves and lined the walls with these bags of leaves.
Yeah, my line of thinking is, if for him to have this many leaves, and I could be wrong, but I almost think that he used almost those 2.5 to 3 years that he was back in Ohio to start bagging leaves. This is a lot of leaves we're talking about.
But
so,
but his girlfriend, I don't know if she ever mentioned that when she was there, that these leaves were in the house. I doubt she would have lived there in those kind of conditions.
Well, but he may not have had them all over the place then. He may have stored them somewhere, in the basement. It's an old home.
Yeah.
Well, you know, here's some crazy stuff. Okay, so when they go into the house and they start, you could say, processing the scene.
Yeah.
This is after he's been caught. They find, they look in the freezer. You'd think this guy would have food, right?
He has squirrels.
Yeah, he has squirrels and red popsicles. So he's, and this is something that people that knew him said, that he would capture squirrels and skin them and eat them.
Yeah, he didn't like going to the grocery store. But apparently he didn't mind going to Walmart.
So the trees provide, I would say, right?
He lived in them and he lived off of them.
Right. So it's hard to say. We just don't have a complete story here on everything. And but, that's why there's some debate on, was he obsessed with trees, or were these trees and these leaves serving another purpose? Because as a younger man, you know, with his family troubles, he would spend a lot of time in trees. So some would say that's maybe a comfort to him, well, that and, he felt a bond with them.
And let's just for a moment say he did plan this abduction and the family got in the way. Well, he's already broken into a house earlier in his life and then burned the house down. So it's not a leap to think that he had planned this abduction. And if and when he got caught, he would just light the leaves on fire in his house as an accelerant and burn any evidence. But when I just look at this and look at the way he's behaved, I think this is the way he lived. And I don't know if he was, if accelerant or burning the house down was on his mind.
Yeah, we can talk about this some more, because when he gets caught and how he gets caught may affect people's perception on this whole scenario. So he's kept her bound and gagged down in the basement. He's assaulted her many times over these three or four days. Meanwhile, the investigators are going over the house. Now, they come across Matthew because he's hanging around. Like, he had showed up at the house, and according to him, he had gone back to burn it down because, again, he's worried about his fingerprints. But the police are there already. Not what he was expecting, you know, the next day. I think this is November 11th. He wasn't expecting police there already.
Interesting. So while the police are investigating at the house, the murder scene, they come across the Walmart bag and the tarps and whatever other items he left behind. And with the Walmart bag, they go to the nearby Walmart and they check the video surveillance cameras and they see a man purchasing tarps and other items. They have him on camera. They go to the parking lot security cams and they see that he drives like a Toyota Yaris. So they have a pretty good description of him and his vehicle. And they see this same guy has come back to the house during the investigation and loitered around. And they found the family's truck and he's by it, loitering, as they say.
Based on the video, they know this is Matthew Hoffman. Mm-hmm. They send a SWAT team 4 days later from the time the people go missing. They send a SWAT team to his house. They bust in the door. One of the SWAT team guys enter. The guy that follows directly behind him throws in a flash grenade.
Oh, geez.
Now, these things are meant to stun. So, mm-hmm. It goes off. And if you've ever had a bright light suddenly hit you, you're disoriented.
And it has a little bit of fire. Thank God it didn't light the leaves.
So they're hoping to take him by surprise. Now, they sort of do because he's asleep on the couch. So I don't think the flashbang worked. I mean, they don't go into this detail, but I don't think it worked because he had his eyes shut. And they rouse him and he wants to know what's going on. And they say, you tell us. And they say from that moment on, for like a full day, despite even hours of interrogation, he won't say anything. He lets tape run out and says nothing. They ask him plenty of questions. They let him know, you know, we know you're involved. It doesn't matter what they tell him.
And they find the girl in the basement.
Right. They do find her. They free her. And she's able to give information. But they still don't know where
her family.
Sarah's mother is. They don't know where the family friend is, and they don't know where Cody is, and they don't know where the dog is. So we have four beings missing out of this house, and they're nowhere to be found. And as we said, he had placed them in a 60 to 65 foot tall hollowed out tree
in the middle of the forest.
Yeah, they're not going to ever find that. He's not talking, but there's one thing, and I know that investigators use this often in serious cases like this. If they want the answers, they have to give up something.
They got a bargain.
So they bargain with him and they say, make a confession, tell us everything that went down, tell us where these people are, and we'll take the death penalty off the table.
Because Ohio is a death penalty state.
Yeah, and they do not have any problems putting this guy down if they must.
Mm-hmm.
When he had been apprehended, he acted very stoic. He didn't want to say anything. But from what I understand, that night he cried quite a bit. And they had to put him on suicide watch because they could tell he was sort of making threats. The other creepy thing is when he was being interrogated, there was a time where he did something. Now, he wasn't talking, but his hands are clasped together and he pounds his chest once and he gestures or something. Mm-hmm. And they say broken heart and he doesn't say anything. And they say, because of what you did. And he shake. No, it's not that. Mm-hmm. And they say, I'm trying to remember here, but I think they ask him if it's because he got caught and he doesn't say anything. You could imagine, this is where, you know, your mind goes through the possibilities of what's going on with this guy. Personally, if you go down the list of what happened, you go through, he attacked everybody that entered this home and kept the 13-year-old and took her back and kept her alive in the basement. I think he's just upset that he got caught.
Yeah.
He makes a 4-page confession. So they find out where the bodies are at.
Mm-hmm.
But remember how they were put in there, that he had to use a pulley system to drop them in from above.
Yeah. Yeah.
To get them out, they had to cut a rectangle out of the front of the tree. That's just a chilling image if you've seen it, if you've seen the tree. And later they cut the tree down. Mm-hmm. Like they don't want to leave a landmark like that out there because, you know, I'm sure people would visit it or who knows what would happen. So they actually end up later, they just take the whole thing down. But he also tries to explain that when he went into that home, he just wanted to go through the house. He wanted to take his time because it was thrilling being in someone else's home.
And just rob the place.
Well, he says that he was just there to rob the place, but he didn't seem to take anything. You know what I mean? Like he wasn't going through and making a pile of things to leave with. And so he tries to explain it was a robbery gone wrong. But why the violence? Because he tries to make it sound like he stabbed everyone twice in the chest, pretty much. And that he hit Tina twice in the head at first with the blackjack.
Yeah.
And if that's the case, then, well, the coroner's report is a little different. Because the coroner's report said that they were stabbed multiple times front and back. So now I don't have the report. So we can't go through and counter his story point by point, but it certainly sounded to me like there was much more violence done to these people than he let on. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. Because the fact that he kidnapped the little girl, how do you go from entering and stealing to homicide and kidnapping? And it just doesn't add up. And his confession is odd and sort of self-centered. And he talks about how he was very nice to the little girl and he fed her and did things for her. And he tried to make himself sound good, like he was a nice person.
Yeah, he said that he fed her hamburgers and they watched the Iron Man movies together, 1 and 2, and that they played video games. If you've seen the way her hands are bound, she's not playing video games.
Yeah. And her version of the story is, no, I was trapped down in a basement where he was extremely abusive. He did not feed me. and he made me wear a diaper and a bag. So he pleads guilty to aggravated rape, kidnapping, tampering with evidence, and three counts of abuse of a corpse, which, again, I always wonder how Robert Durst didn't get charged with that, but was pretty much sentenced to life. The survivors of this horrible crime, they tell him what a horrible person he is, and they get to face him in court. And it's pretty emotional to watch those.
Well, in court, neither Sarah nor Matthew speak, but their lawyers do.
Yeah.
From statements that they've given to that to the lawyers. And Matthew's lawyer tries to make it clear that it was a burglary gone wrong, that that's not what he intended. You can actually find this online and listen to it on YouTube, but when the lawyer says, and he apologizes, that part is lower and it's short. It's almost like, I'm not even sure the lawyer believes it. He tries to convey it very well, but when he gets to that part, it's almost like he can't quite pull it off.
And there's laughter in the courtroom.
Now, Sarah, her lawyer, gets up and he speaks from her written statement. And it's very much a, I'm not afraid of you anymore. And it's also a, how could you do this? How could you do this to a family that she believes he'll suffer the rest of his life for what he's done? I don't know about you, but it never really seemed like he was remorseful except for the getting caught part.
So I really like Sarah. She has gone on to speak to media and news reporters, where she has started an organization for victims of violent crimes, is going on the circuit, let's say, with her father, who appeared to be supportive of her and taking care of her. And he would talk about his daughter, but apparently all was not quite so well at home.
Well, it's difficult to know exactly what's going on, but on one hand, you have this 13-year-old girl that's suddenly thrust into this. It's a nightmare. She's living in a nightmare. She's in a situation where her hands are completely duct taped. She's bound. She's gagged. She's wearing a diaper. And she's on a bed of leaves in a house full of leaves with the psycho. And as she says, she's very complicit. She just wants to survive. Now she's moved home with her dad, who she hadn't lived with. She's lived with her mom. She's not lived with her dad. And while there may have been a reason for that, because she's with her dad and his wife, and at some point, her dad punches her in the back. And so we don't know if she's having trouble trying to adjust to life after this incident, or if he's got kind of a temper.
And he's having trouble adjusting to this new situation also.
Right. It's a change in his life. And then his wife, which is her stepmother, kicks her down the stairs within, I think, 6 days of the punching incident.
Oh, wow.
So she ends up having to talk to the lawyer and get a...
emancipation or something?
No, she gets a restraining order against the mother, the stepmother. And then she is going to take both of them to court.
So she's gone through this nightmare and she's thrust into another abusive situation.
That's the way it sounds.
Wow.
Now, her dad and the stepmother agreed to go through a domestic violence program, and then the charges are dropped. She's done with her dad at that point, and she moves in with her grandmother, which is her mother's mother. Yeah. I think her name's Barbara Herman.
Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman, passes the savings on to you, and Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices. along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, Quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. Quince.com/GenY. Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
When she's going and doing these interviews, it's sort of ironic that her father is sitting there right next to her, appearing to be supportive.
And yeah, he even says, as the father, I'm supposed to be teaching her about life, but I feel like she's teaching me much more about life than I ever could have taught her.
Yeah. This might be stupid to even bring up, but every single reporter that she spoke to said that she was the bravest little girl they ever met. And I kind of was like, she's the strongest girl. Like, somebody that's brave has a choice in their life, and they choose the harder path. They choose the good thing to do or the harder thing to do. She didn't get a choice here. She was totally and completely victimized by Matthew. She made it through, and she's brave to go on from that, and she's brave to do these things. But for people to say she was brave to endure this, I just think, man, she's a strong person. And I don't, to me, bravery is a choice, and you make a choice. She didn't get a choice in this matter. I don't know. I don't know why that bothered me so much when I heard all these news reporters saying this to her, but maybe it's a non-issue and it's just a word and I should get over it.
Well, she may have just been brave to talk about it. On the other hand, it may have just been people don't know what to say to a young girl like that that's been through something they can't even imagine.
Yeah.
So it's difficult to say. But there's one interesting thing that really has stuck with me throughout this whole case, and it's not just the fact that Matthew Hoffman was into trees and into leaves. There was something else that sort of stuck with me, and that's Sarah claims, and this was said in court as well, that she doesn't believe that Matthew acted alone.
Oh, yeah, because he said, if you try to escape, my accomplices will stop you. The people working with me will get you.
I'm not even sure that's totally it, because she said she heard him talking to someone else. Like, outside the house, there weren't any other vehicles. She doesn't know how he got there. Again, he could have parked somewhere else. You know, this has happened before where someone apprehends, I shouldn't say apprehend, where someone kidnaps somebody and claims help. Like, oh, even if you get past me, you've got to deal with the other people.
Mm-hmm. For what we can see, he didn't have any accomplices.
No, he definitely did not have any accomplices. This is all him.
Yeah.
This, I'm sure most people would agree with this. He staked out that house. He stalked that girl. And then he probably is telling the truth when he says he didn't expect to see Tina, or especially Stephanie. I think he thought he was just going to have to maybe knock out the kid and take the girl.
Yeah. And they actually also, part of that plea deal, the taking the death penalty off the, they said, tell us where the bodies are and tell us who you were working with. And at that point is when he says it was all him. Was he talking to the leaves?
Well, that's what I was thinking is he has to be somewhat crazy, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there's no way around it.
Yeah.
So if he was talking to something, yeah, maybe he was talking to the leaves. Maybe he was talking to the trees. It totally makes sense to me. To me, he lied to her about having accomplices. Mm-hmm. It's just a way to make her comply even more. He tries to come off as a guy who just made some bad choices at the wrong time. He even goes on to say in his confession that he was going to give her a little bit more freedom every day until about around Christmas, to where he was hoping she would just run away.
Yeah.
Does anyone else have a BS meter going off right now?
Mm.
The guy had never intended. In fact, he says he never could have harmed her. I'll tell you right now, like I said, he had bound her hands, bound her feet, put a diaper on her. She got a very good look at him. I don't think she makes it. If that SWAT team doesn't show up 4 days later, she can't stay in that diaper like that indefinitely. He's not going to care for her indefinitely. I think at some point he would have killed her too.
He would have had to. Otherwise he gets caught and he's doesn't have plans to get caught.
Well, and it's just the maintenance. I just don't see him sticking it out. This guy's crazy. I don't think he can maintain a captive that long. Because it's just the situation will deteriorate more and more.
He can't even take care of himself.
No, he really can't.
Yeah.
And this has been pointed out. It's not just me and it's not just you that's come up with this, but other people pointed out the investigation in this case was done very, very well.
Mm-hmm.
The fact that they were able to go and get the footage. So often we hear, why didn't they pull this footage or why didn't they check this phone log? They did everything they were supposed to do, and they were able to get this guy within 4 days, which I think is perfectly reasonable.
It's outstanding.
So for anyone that says, oh, they keep bashing on the police and saying the investigators don't know what they're doing. No, they really did a good job on this case because they got the guy.
Yeah.
And I know they were too late for some of these victims, but they were killed fairly early on, and there was nothing they could have done. This guy, yeah, he can rot in prison. Because, you know, just like that tree that he put the bodies in, I mean, I get the feeling he's hollowed out.
He is. He's a hollow person.
Yeah. A hollow person with a hollow tree. And it just, it's like a match made in hell, I guess. But in my mind, they saved Sarah. And you can say she helped herself too, and I think she did. But the investigation was done very well. They were able to save her. And now she's able to go out and spread that message of, I survived.
Be strong and you have help within me and my organization.
Right. And she's trying to make a difference. So, yeah, that's amazing. Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Murder on My Mind, a new podcast available exclusively on Wondery Plus, explores the circumstances leading up to the murder of two young men and the mistrials of the man accused of killing them. Up-and-coming rapper YNW Melly gained notoriety in the hip-hop world for his shocking lyrics and criminal exploits. When two of his best friends were gunned down in a drive-by shooting, investigators suspected the young rapper staged the scene. But after not one, but two trials that ended in hung juries and new evidence that may place YNW Melly at the scene of the crime, his trial has been paused indefinitely. With countless twists and turns, Law and Crime covers all angles of the case and begs the question, is this young artist the victim of a witch hunt or a silver-tongued devil who's evil to the core? Listen to Murder on My Mind exclusively and ad-free on Wondery Plus. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or on Apple Podcasts.